Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and my favourite occasional dress-wearing man, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate.
I'm adding no context there either.
That's fine.
We're not used to recording directly after a game, but we've just watched the Olympiacos match, and we thought we'd talk about that first when it's kind of fresh in our head. It's been a bit of a social media meltdown post-game, and I suppose we should talk about why that is. Bardi, what are your initial thoughts? How did you find the match? What did you think of a lineup when it came out?
I was all excited to do a post-match podcast. And then we went 2-0 up and I was really excited by it. And then now I'm not so much. But I need to... The problem is by doing something directly after a match, you kind of get a bit emotional. And I'm a little bit emotional now. But perhaps come December, this was a good point. With a team that was quite clearly not match fit and quite clearly rusty. Perhaps it'll prove to be a good point. Perhaps it won't. But I'm more upset about the fact that we lost a 2-goal lead again.
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable take. It's not nice to lose 2-goal leads. But, I mean, Nathan, we probably didn't deserve that 2-goal lead in the first place, right?
No, I thought we were playing pretty bad. And we scored 2 goals from 2 shots, one of which was a penalty. So, which has been the story of the last week in a way. A weird performance. I think probably the simplest answer is that we just weren't fit and we had too many non-sharp players. And when you play the 4-2-3-1, as we sort of discussed quite a lot before, there's a huge strain on the two central midfielders. And I think Ndombele was just way off the pace tonight. He still showed like a few moments of nice tricks and silk, but also half the time he miscontrolled the ball and arrived late and everything. And I think everything just shut down from that point, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I tweeted about Ndombele because I think there are signs there that he is just a lovely footballer, but he's just not there fitness-wise yet, and it's going to take him some time to get into the swing of things at Spurs. Premier League is a very, very intense league, and it'll take some adjustment. I mean, obviously, it's not a Premier League game tonight, but it certainly felt like it in terms of the way Olympiacos played against us. They were in our faces. They were very lively. They looked incredibly good going forward. Less so at the back, though, and that's where it was frustrating for me because I felt like we could have taken advantage. And like you both said, the ring rust there kind of held us back. One man stood out in particular, and Simon C. Gray, who is Simon C. Gray on Twitter, says, "Eriksen, what the fuck?" Yeah. I don't recall seeing Eriksen ever play that badly before.
I think I'm going to put it out there. I think it's the kit. I don't think
I did not see that coming.
I tweeted this and then I couldn't believe how many people agreed with me. I couldn't tell one player from the other. They all looked the same. So maybe it was that. How many times have I ever confused Eriksen for Harry Kane? There's like 2 feet of difference between them, but they look the same. It's the kit. But
I'm definitely buying that kit. I was thinking about it, and now it makes everyone look 6 foot tall.
Yeah,
I have to get it.
I mean, players have bad games, and we just have to hope that that's a bad game and it's a one-off. But the sad thing was his confidence just seemed to completely sap away in the second half, and he wasn't even trying anything. And Eriksen doesn't try things is not an Eriksen, really, and that's the frustrating thing. The other thing that we really need to talk about is Davinson Sanchez playing at right back again. And you know, let's preface this by saying that I don't think any of us blame Davinson for this. He's trying his best out there,
yeah.
But he is not a right back. Nathan, what did you make of that? And yeah. Why was he playing there?
I don't know. So we've seen him in the two main situations, which is having to play a defensive role against Arsenal and having to play an attacking role against Olympiacos. And in both situations, he just looks completely lost. And yeah, like you said, that's no fault of his own. Why are we playing him there? Well, I understand sort of rotating Aurier, who's just come back, if we're now seeing him as first choice. And if you take that Kyle Walker-Peters is not fit, like he didn't even come on despite the fact that we were completely falling apart at right back. So you have to assume, you have to assume that Walker-Peters isn't fit. Does that leave Davinson Sanchez as our third choice option? Definitely fans are going to say, what about Alderweireld? How about Sissoko? And I understand that, but I wouldn't mind just sort of experimenting with other potential ideas when we're in a similar situation, but I wouldn't be shocked if that is the best that we can offer there.
God, I know. I refuse to believe that. He's so stiff there. It's really uncomfortable to watch him. He's got no body swerve or movement at all. Like, to be fair, he did that one good move like 15 minutes in where he dummied a guy and won a free kick. But generally, he scares me every time he gets the ball at right back as well. He's passing inside is slightly reckless. He doesn't look like he wants to receive the ball. He doesn't want to sort of stand high and wide and just stretch the pitch out. He didn't know how to play the role, and that's not his fault. He's not a right back. I know Nathan's like, all players don't have positions, but Davinson Sanchez definitely has a position, and it is centre back.
Fair enough.
Like, I get it. Footballers can be malleable and adaptable, and particularly in midfield and up front, but not centre backs.
No,
not Davinson Sanchez.
For a country that, you know, proud Latin culture of like body movement and everything else, musical rhythm.
Right.
Yeah, he looked a big stiff idiot. He just looked so out of place. But, you know, he defended better than he did against Arsenal. So there's a positive there, but he did look totally out all at sea going forward. And I think it was a moment in the second half where he did a nice 1-2 with Sissoko, and then they both kind of looked at each other and they were like, what do we do now?
Now what? Yeah, now what?
We've got ourselves.
I totally saw that.
Edge of the area. They did a 1-2 and they're like, oh, better go back. And they kind of like shuffled back. It was kind of like youngsters turning up at like a rave going, yeah, we've bitten off more than we could chew here. Let's sneak back out.
Let's call it a day. It's 10:30. No one need know about it.
But I thought defensively he looked... I know Davies had that that winger up against him who I'd never heard of until Nathan did a little highlight video of him. And then I was just like, well done, Nathan. Jinxed now. He's going to turn out to be Ronaldo. And he was pretty good. But I thought Davies was terrible. We just lacked width. And perhaps this wasn't the game to keep Son on the bench, and maybe it would have been better to start Son and keep Dele on the bench, because at least Son offers us some kind of width going forward.
So I was going to come on to that. We had a question from James, who is Jalahil on Twitter. Is this rotation craze from Poch getting a bit out of hand and not factoring in situational context? And I was going to say, you know, Son looked like he was on the cusp of a hot streak in the Palace game, which we'll talk about shortly. So it felt to me like a good time to keep him in and maintain some rhythm and maybe rest, I don't know, Ericsson.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Son is one of those guys that when he hits form, he's like a horse. You've got to ride him until his legs fall off. He does blow hot and cold. But then he's also very useful against Leicester, and he does tend to have good games against them. So I can see the logic in resting him. But we have to get these players fit at some point. We have to roll the dice against some team that we're going to throw in four players who haven't started a game all season. So I think Pochettino thought he could chance his arm here. And as I said earlier, it might turn out that point is pretty solid, because I don't know how many, I don't think Belgrade are going to beat Olympiacos at home, and Bayern will probably struggle there as well. So, you know, we had to give these players game time at some point.
Yeah, I do agree that it was the right thing to give some of these players minutes in their legs in a, you know, inverted commas, easier game. But maybe it was too much at once. Nathan, what do you think about the rotation?
Yeah, but like Buddy says, you know, we need to get Delhi back into starting. We need to get Ndombele starting. We need to not exhaust the players that are our current starters. So we do need to, yeah. Maybe it was too much at one time. But yeah, it's got to be done at some point. You know, when every game counts, you've got to find some kind of space and time to make these rotations. Maybe we could have seen more in the league so as to spare ourselves from such extremes in a singular game. But otherwise, yeah, you've got to make them regardless.
Mm. Nathan, you touched earlier on Kyle Walker-Peters being on the bench. And Sean Gormley says, why does Poch need both Dyer and Wanyama on the bench when he seemingly never plans on playing a holding midfielder ever again? And that substitute bench tonight was somewhat bizarre, was it not?
Can you talk us through it?
So Walker-Peters being on the bench was the big one because...
He didn't come on when we needed him. Yeah.
You know, if he's not fit enough to play 90 minutes, fine. But don't have him on the bench. Have someone who would be fit enough to play, you know, 45 minutes even. I thought that was like an obvious halftime change. So we then had Son and Lamela, which I think made complete sense. And Sissoko, fine. But Dyer and Wanyama both being on there, neither's played this. I think Dyer's played a handful of minutes and Wanyama hasn't so far this season. So, you know, same issues with rust, presumably. but why are they both on there? They play the same role. Why do you need two players who, you know, probably can't play a long stretch and both play the same position on the bench? It's just, it doesn't stack up. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. Both those players are sort of our old broken defensive midfielders.
Yeah.
We would like to move on. I think it's just simply a case of Pochettino says, well, these are the other named players who I have. And regardless of what kind of bench that shapes up to be, it's just whoever's like the 12th player, the 13th player and so on. It certainly doesn't look good. You wouldn't expect us to bring on both Dyer and Wanyama for any given context. No. But yeah, I don't know. It's putting in sort of senior players for the sake of it ahead of what we actually might need on the bench.
And he's done that before. Yeah. He's done that before. We know that, you know, when he's got form for doing this.
I don't think that there was any tactical or football situation in that match that would have needed us to bring on Wanyama. I just don't think anything could have befallen that 11 that Pochettino would have turned to his bench and gone, go on Wanyama, this is your moment, because it just doesn't happen. He'd put Dyer on. And I agree with you. What's he even doing on the bench? He's just wasting the space. You might as well put, I don't know, where was Skip? We put Skip on the bench just so he can hang out. But
or Troy Parrott, you know?
Exactly. Troy Parrott is messing around with the under-19s, which you just put him on the bench and maybe he'll learn something, maybe he'll see something. Maybe if we're cruising 3-0, you just chuck him on to give Kane a bit of a rest. Wanyama on that bench is just, it's just pointless. And you were actually being really polite. Sometimes I call you a bit of a snake, but you're really polite just using the word rust in terms of Wanyama instead of saying he's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead as a footballer.
Oh, sadly, I think you're right. Okay, well, I think we're being a bit miserable when actually Bardi's right. That point might not look too terrible in a couple of months' time. So let's talk about happier things. We thrashed Crystal Palace on Saturday. Bardi, you were there. How was the atmosphere? How was the match?
I was actually in Lake Como and I missed the entire match.
Oh, I do apologise.
It's all right. I sold my ticket on the ticket exchange. Very, very quick and easy transaction.
So you didn't actually watch the game at all?
No, I couldn't. I was on a boat. I was on a boat in the middle of the lake, enjoying cocktails with my wife and giving hot takes on Twitter every time she went to the loo, not having seen the game. And some of it was spot on as usual for myself.
Right, well, in that case, allow Nathan and I to talk you through our 4-0 drubbing of Palace.
Go for it.
Nathan, we played 4-2-2-2.
Yeah, we did, which we'd sort of seen before against Arsenal in patches and maybe before that as well, which is interesting. I think the 4-2-2-2, oh, Bynoe just nearly scored. Sorry, I'm getting distracted because I'm watching our group's other game. The 4-2-2-2 is interesting. It's sort of, to me, and you can sort of see this within the shape, but in approach, it's a compromise between the diamond and the 4-2-3-1, right? We're still doing the diamond's thing of saying, okay, we're just going to lob all of our attacking stars onto the pitch and we're going to play quite a bit more direct, and we're just going to blow teams away with our attacking talent, which I think is what we did against Palace. But it doesn't have the same restriction of width that the Diamond has. So yeah, just an interesting twist on how we were doing things last season with the Diamond when our midfield isn't in the best shape.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary. We kind of got a little lucky against Palace in the sense that they were awful. They were absolutely awful. Sacco in particular looked like he was... like he hadn't played a game of football in a year. And we got that early goal from a kind of long Toby Alderweireld ball over the top. Son cut inside beautifully, took the goal well. And then it felt like, for a short time at least, we got our Tottenham back. Did you feel that way, Nate? Did you feel like we were reinvigorated in that first half?
I did at the time. But, and of course, now after Olympiacos, it's easier to look back and say no. But I did sort of calm down after the game and think, well, hang on, we only really performed after going two up, after Palace were stretched and demoralised. We weren't really involved in the centre of the pitch. We didn't really control the game. I don't want to put too much... Look, it's a great result. It's great to see us put for, you know, a 4-0 result and all of the rest of that. I'm not. I don't want to be like, no, do not enjoy this result. I'm just saying we're not 100% there yet. And obviously that is vindicated by the most recent game.
See, I was hoping you were going to say, yeah, we were really good. It was lovely to see Spurs play some free-flowing football. We controlled the second half well. Didn't have to exert much energy. And then I was going to say, well, hold on, you know, let's not get too excited. It wasn't all that great. And now I'm just having to say, yeah, Nathan's right.
There is
dive in first, Chris. Stop coming to me first. Tell us what you think. Go on.
Go on, buddy.
No, just the one thing I saw. It just shows the huge difference of having some fullbacks that are reasonably comfortable on the ball and going wide and attacking. It does open up the pitch, and we do. Pochettino's best Tottenham teams have always relied on a decent pair of fullbacks, and I think that was pretty much what we were missing tonight. Had we had a proper right back, I think we probably would have won that game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Aurier had a really good spell in the first half. I didn't actually think he had as good a game as others did. So Pochettino mentioned his focus after the match, and that is such an issue with Aurier. He switches off. People would say that about Kyle Walker. He switches off. But with Aurier, it's in a way, it's even more apparent because he literally just like takes his eye off what he's doing and just frequently plays the ball straight to an opposition player or behind his man just from literally not looking at them anymore. And that's disconcerting to me. But he did play a couple of really nice crosses. He got into good positions, and there were points in the first half where he looked kind of very dominant defensively. I don't think he's a focused enough player to be a Pochettino fullback. I know that sounds weird because we've had, you know, unfocused players before, and Danny Rose can be a little like that, but Aurier takes it to an extreme. So I'm still not fully on the Aurier is now a Tottenham right back train. I don't think he's a viable long term option.
No, but
I still think we'll sell him.
He's a better short term option.
He is. That's fair. So my take on the game was that we were absolutely fine. That Palace were hopeless.
They're going down.
I really think they might this time. I kind of admire what Hodgson's done with Palace. Over a period of time, but this time he's got his squad into a right mess. We spoke about it last time, how old they are. They're not in a good state. Normally they defend the box really well, and they protect their defence well through Milivojevic, and that was not the case in this game. We were able to get at them very, very easily, and you know, our final ball was lacking quite often, and we may have scored more had that final ball been better. But I didn't think we had to play well, and we won at a canter. So I don't know. I definitely don't think that it's worth getting overly excited about Spurs being back, but neither did I think it was absolute doom and gloom after the Arsenal match. So yeah. I still think things are broadly fine. And, you know, we've spoken about the Olympiacos game. I don't think there's any need to panic after that either. We've got a lot of players returning from injury who, you know, if we're picking our strongest team, that's not the 11 that would have been out. That we were, you know, shuffling the pack, seeing who could do 90, seeing who could get some minutes in their legs, and also having to experiment again with Sanchez at right back. So we don't need to worry too much. We've got Leicester next. Have you seen much of them this season, Nath?
I haven't. I'm impressed with their squad. I think we're all sort of a bit excited about their squad, and I do rate Brendan Rodgers as well, but they're sitting in fifth, but I think they've had a sort of slightly awkward and slow start. I didn't watch the United game, but apparently they were very underwhelming, failing to take advantage of a very weak United midfield.
Yeah, I think Leicester haven't quite worked out their best 11 this season. Bardi, have you seen them at all?
Yeah, I've watched bits of them, and I kind of agree with what both of you said. They just don't seem to have clicked yet. They don't seem to have any kind of fluid. I think they're still kind of lost between a team that counterattacks and a team that wants to control possession. I don't think it really suits Vardy the way they're playing at the moment. So I think for them to truly become a Rodgers team, it's going to take a little bit longer. I thought the Ayoze Perez signing was a bit. I mean, he's a fine player. He's okay, but I don't think he was worth that kind of money. And I'm not sure how he fits in their style. And I just think stylistically, they're not where they should be. They're a team trying to play two different games of football.
So I like Perez quite a lot as a player, but I don't think he was a good fit for Leicester purely because I really like Harvey Barnes. I think he's excellent. And I think Perez, although they're not that similar in style, I think Perez will ultimately restrict the number of minutes that Barnes gets, which I think is a mistake for them long term. So Barnes played in their previous match against Bournemouth where they won 3-1 and by all accounts played really well. And then he was on the bench for the United game where they had XG of 0.46, which is not great. Not great, although, you know, away at Old Trafford. Years ago, you'd have said that's fine, but not so much these days. I feel like we should be beating Leicester as they stand now. I think they'll accelerate through the season and they'll probably end strongly, but I feel like at this point we should be beating them. And I feel confident we can. I think we're fine and we'll do fine. I'm not too worried. Let's talk about some listener questions. Paul King, who is just some bloke on the internet, he said, in a 4-2-3-1 and with Eriksen and Son dead certainties, where does an effective Dele fit in? Nathan, you've written about Dele quite a bit. Where do you see him now in this incarnation of Spurs?
I do think he sort of has to be a little patient at the moment and play his way back into the team. But I think we're leaning towards a 4-2-3-1 the majority of the time. And I think there's a place for him in the team. Maybe he won't be absolutely a locked-on starter like he has been for all of his Tottenham career so far. But I think that he'll be playing, you know, at least two games out of three. And he'll probably mix up positionally a little bit where he plays, but for the most part, in a very attacking role.
Do you agree with that, Bardi?
Yeah, I think I know we're in September now. We're nearly in October, and we just got to get through these next 20 days or so. Get people fit, and then we'll see. But I mean, if Eriksen continues to play how he's playing, then he's going to get dropped. I mean, I know Pochettino seems unlikely to do that, but it's just we're going to have to trundle through these games and just hope to kind of pick up some form and pick up some fitness, and then we can see where the chips lie.
You can tell we've asked for questions after a defeat because they're all pretty miserable. Stephen Hahn says, are we concerned about Kane? He said, we need more from our superstar and he just isn't influencing games as he should be. Sometimes he seems to be bypassed completely during build-up and or just out of position. Nathan, go for it on that one.
I thought he was all right tonight. I saw him drop deep and have a nice couple of passes. He won the penalty, has another taken on the left for a cross that threatened. I'm not too worried about Kane. I think we will soon, I'm sure, get up and running and to our best and with our new players and be fresh. And then if Kane is, you know, not banging one in every game, then you can start to worry. But right now, I think it's very harsh to judge Kane about what's going on the pitch.
I could not agree more. There's the stats community are starting to round on Kane, I've noticed.
They love it.
They're looking at Kane's shot numbers over the last year, and they're saying that Harry Kane is no longer an elite striker, basically. I'm paraphrasing, but... And I disagree. I think there are so many reasons why Kane's shot numbers have dropped. So firstly, playing with Lucas, as we've discussed before, I think harms Kane's output because Lucas is doing some of the things and getting into some of the positions that Kane should be doing and getting into. Also, I think Dele being deeper has harmed Kane. So as we know, Dele had to drop deep a lot last season to help out in midfield because we didn't have a midfield. And that meant that he wasn't dragging defenders away from Harry Kane and creating extra space. So of course that's going to have an impact. And then Kane's had his own major injury problems and it's taken him time to come back from those. So it's only natural that his shot numbers would be down. I don't see what the fuss is about. maybe I'm just overprotective of him and I'm looking for excuses, but I agree with Nathan. I think we need to see how things go and then make some judgments after that. Buddy, are you worried at all about Kane?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to put my neck out there. No, I'm not worried about him at all. He's playing fine. As you said, he needs a little bit of support. No, I'm not worried.
Say what you really want to say.
He's finished. No. there was a couple of years ago, I had this conversation after a few beers with T, and it was just like, is there anything left to come from Kane, or have we kind of maxed him out? And perhaps there's a school of thought that he will never be the same player he is. There was an article recently written by, was it Jonathan Wilson, who has been quite moody on Spurs recently. And he was like, Kane is no longer the player that he once was. And perhaps that's true. He's not maybe as fast as he was, but he still offers a huge amount. And I'm not worried. He'll still clock up the goals and grab the assists. And he's still one of the best number nines in the world. So it's fine.
I'll tell you one thing. He was more angry on the pitch than I've seen him in a long time today. Did you notice that?
Well,
after the Lamella shot, which he should have crossed, Kane was going nuts.
I'm not sure the cross was open to him.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced he was either. I can see why Kane was annoyed.
When he was fouled for the penalty, I saw him sort of squaring off against the left back, and I thought, well, that's not like you, Harry. What's going on? So yeah, I picked up on that as well. That's strange.
Yeah, and then later in the game as well, there was another foul where he was pointing. It was where he had the header, which went out for a corner. And the defender was immediate. Semedo was saying that it wasn't a corner.
Oh, yeah.
And Kane, like, was pointing in his face, getting quite angry. It was weird. I've not seen him get that cross for a while.
I do think that he's a player who's quite responsive to the conversation that goes on around him. So maybe maybe he's sort of picked up on the stuff that's been written about him recently, and he's let that get to him, because he does. Like, when I feel like the whole doesn't score in August thing gets to him, I think the whole whenever there's concern over his form, I feel like it's sort of like a prophecy that sort of becomes true because of its existence, you know. And he really cares about goal records and all of the stuff like that.
That's such an interesting point. He's a very proud man, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons that I think he might stay at Spurs longer than he probably should.
Yeah.
It works in our favour, so great. But yeah, he really does. He really cares about stuff that doesn't seem that important, the intangibles. He's quite old-fashioned in that respect, and I do love it. I don't know. The media in this country do love to try and peg back our superstars, and I just don't get it. It's just because make interesting reading.
It's not even one particular journal. There was like a conversation after the round of England games that Raheem Sterling has replaced him as England's biggest star, and it's like, who cares? Like, how does that sort of that antagonism within the top two or three best players in the squad help in any way? How is, like, why turn a positive of Raheem Sterling's brilliant performance from the angle of, well, Kane's no longer the star? Like, why not have two brilliant players, you know?
Who complement each other perfectly.
They really link up brilliantly. Let's splash all of our money on Raheem Sterling.
Sell the stadium, buy Sterling.
That's it.
Mediocre Spur 2019, who is Comrade Spurs, who has a very, very good podcast as well called Wheeler Dealer Radio. You should listen to that. He says, I think this is aimed at Nathan, Daniel Levy, buy some fullbacks, please.
Hello, Ben.
Nathan, do you want to explain that one?
No, I think that speaks for himself. He's correct.
We do need to buy some fullbacks, though, right?
I mean, the window's closed right now, but well, we have got Sessegnon.
Leave, you'll find a way.
Yeah. There's a loophole deep in the paperwork. There's a way. You can sign a player on a free. You have to get them to buy them way out their own contract, and then you can sign them as a free agent.
He just needs better lawyers, and then we can sign some fullbacks.
There we go.
Yeah,
we do have Sessegnon. We do have a left back potentially in waiting.
I nearly cried this week when I saw what they wrote in the Teen News article about him, that he felt irritation in his previous hamstring injury.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
No, it's going to be chronic, isn't it?
You don't even have to play for Spurs to get a Spurs injury anymore.
Right, I know. I feel like we need to end on a high, don't we? But Buddy, say something positive.
Oh,
God. That's not positive.
I really liked how Ndombele took the ball onto his left foot and had a crack. That was nice. And I thought Sissoko looked really full of beans when he came on.
He did, actually. Yeah, he did. He really, really did.
Wait. I got it. And I can't believe Windy didn't mention Harry Winks was thoroughly good.
That's true.
Winksy was by far our best player against Olympiacos. He seemed like the only one to play with intensity. And he was feisty as well. I do love the Winks feist. It's one of my favourite things. He plays like a fan.
And he looks good in a turtleneck too.
He really does. He's a handsome young man, isn't he?
He is.
Okay, right. We're going to beat Leicester, boys.
Hey.
Let's leave it there. And we're back after the Leicester match.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and SoundCloud D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.